The ESPN College Game Day host who will be in Atlanta is with us now on the Pepsi Hotline. Reese Davis is there. Hello, Reese. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. Thanks a lot. Such a weird narrative for you guys to show up for a game Alabama is in when they are an underdog, and it's hard to find people that even think they can win the game.
It is unusual. It's been a long time since they've been an underdog this big, and they've also had, I think there have been four times in the last, since 08, I guess, that they've been an underdog like this, and they've won four of the games outright, and all four of them, I think, and two of them were against Georgia, and two of them were, or maybe three of them were in Atlanta. So, you know, they have a little history on their side, but the precious present, as people like to say, I think makes it a tough looking matchup, because what you've seen from the Alabama offensive line in the last few games, it seems like a very unfavorable situation against that great Georgia defensive line. But maybe on the flip side, you know, Will Anderson is a human game plan wrecker. So, you know, maybe that's, going to make it a situation where Alabama can find a way to stay in the fight.
If Kirby's going to win his first national championship, still a lot of work to do. Three big games, SEC championship, semifinal, national championship. But when you go back the last 3 years, we're talking about some of the greatest teams we've seen in the history of college football, from 18 Clemson, 19 LSU, and 20 Bama. If Georgia does close this out, would you put them in that group?
No, I would not. And I would also argue that along with that, that you could include 18 Alabama, 19 Alabama as well. I mean, those were really, really good teams. I know 19 lost two games, but, you know, prior to Tua's injury, there was only one team that could have beaten LSU, and it was Alabama. And I would say the same about 18 Clemson. So you've had generational type teams the last few years. And while this Georgia defense is a generational defense, now they stack up with 2011 Alabama, with 2016 Alabama, which I know didn't win the championship, that was still an elite defense in the modern era, I mean. But the offense, while good, is not that. And I think because of that, I wouldn't quite put them in that category. But there's nothing on the trophy that says you have to be a generational team to be champion. So, you know, and I really think that the only team that can beat Georgia, and I don't favor them to do so, but I think the only team that can beat Georgia is Alabama. So, and actually, because styles make fights, I'm going to rephrase that. There are two teams that could have beaten Georgia, or could have, Alabama or Ohio State. I don't think Michigan's style matches up well with Georgia. Sort of like the Michigan State Ohio State game, and then the Michigan Ohio State game. Michigan State didn't have the right pieces to be able to beat Ohio State, but Michigan did. So I sort of think it's like that. Michigan is a better overall team than Ohio State, but Ohio State has the tools that would have given Georgia a lot of problems. And I sort of think that really Alabama is the only team that stands in Georgia's way of a national championship, absent, you know, some type of meltdown game where you have a bunch of turnovers or breakdowns in special teams.
Is there a, you just came from Jim Harbaugh's big win up there against Ohio State. Is there a little bit of the same storyline for Kirby Smart against Nick Saban here? Is it one of those, if not now, then when, Reese, for Kirby Smart against Nick?
That part of it, yes. I don't think it's quite as pronounced or quite as large an albatross for Kirby in Georgia as it was for Jim and Michigan. But yes, I mean, this is the year to do it. I wouldn't suppose that because of the way he's recruiting and the type of coach he is, there will be other shots. But this would be a bitter disappointment, I think, for Georgia people and for Kirby and certainly for the team first and foremost. I learned my lesson from the Saban press conference the other day. I already knew, but I think we already know that.
Good reminder,
anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, a reminder. It would be a bitter, bitter disappointment. And there is a little, I think when I, like I said, for Oklahoma State last week, if not now, when? That's because Oklahoma State, while as good as Gundy has been and as consistent as they've been, they have to develop. They don't reload, you know, and they've got a ton of super seniors on that great Cowboy defense. And it was set up. You got to do it now or else you're going to cycle back down. Georgia's not going to cycle back down, but certainly it would be viewed as a gargantuan missed opportunity if they don't win at all.
ESPN's Reese Davis is with us on the Pepsi Hotline. You'll see him from College Game Day on location there in Atlanta for the SEC Championship. You were talking about styles make fights. Did Michigan catch a break or not getting Iowa instead of Wisconsin? Which style do you think gives them more trouble?
Well, they beat the dog best out of Wisconsin when they played him the first time. So I don't think it really matters because both of those teams play like Michigan. And Iowa's got a really, really good defense. They've got an opportunistic secondary and really good players in the secondary, even though they've had some injuries there. I called their game against Iowa State earlier this year, but they can't score. And I don't see how in the world they're going to score enough points to win the game. Michigan doesn't turn the ball over. They don't make mistakes. Cade McNamara, he threw a bad one against Ohio State the other day. It was funny. I was standing in the end zone behind him. And as soon as he set up, you could do it. And I didn't care who won the game, but I was like, no. And because you could see the interception coming, but that's been rare. And Iowa has feasted on guys that turn the ball over. Just ask Talia Tagovailoa. I mean, they wore him out with interceptions and turnovers. Michigan doesn't do that. And they've got I think the top two guys for the Heisman Trophy should be Will Anderson and Aiden Hutchinson at Michigan. Pick your order, depending on how they play this weekend. But, you know, Aiden Hutchinson is also strong. He's a great pass rusher, but he's good against the run. Ojabo, the other end, David Ojabo, is also good against the run. And they're both great pass rushers. So I just don't see how Iowa, absent some type of meltdown, or Michigan still basking in the euphoria of finally beating Ohio State and just not being ready to play. You know, I don't really see how Michigan stumbles here.
You know, when Jim Harbaugh took this program over in 2015, I think most people believed it was going to be an elite program year in, year out. And 2016, they were close. Ironically, it was Iowa that beat them on a last-second field goal in an upset that probably kept them away from the Big Ten championship game and maybe getting to a 14 playoff. But now that they're so close, why did it take Jim Harbaugh so long?
That's a great question. And, you know, the thing is I sort of started thinking about the comparison between he and John Cooper. So I had my standout researcher, Marissa Dowling, help me break down some numbers on that. It's uncanny. Jim's been great against, or near great against, everybody not named Ohio State. And so they certainly had a rough season last year, and they've had some, several iterations of what they want to do on offense. And I think they've really settled on something. A good mix right now. And Josh Gattis, I think, has really done a nice job as their offensive coordinator. And it's allowed them to establish an identity. And I think before they were really stubborn and trying to play that Stanford-style bully ball, and you can't really do that in the Big Ten because Iowa and Wisconsin and certainly Ohio State are not going to be bullied. You know, I mean, you may beat them, but you're not going to, you know, just hit them in the mouth and make a back up, you know, like a lot of teams did against Jim Stanford teams. So it's maybe it's some of that, I don't know. So, I mean, and the other thing too is, guys, who is beating Ohio State? Save for the random upset here and there, which everybody's vulnerable to. It's sort of like saying, you know, well, this team's not very good in the SEC West because they don't beat Alabama. I mean, who beats Alabama? I mean, not many. And that's sort of the same way for Jim and Ohio State. Ohio State is elite NFL churning talent out year after year. And just because he didn't beat them, you know, I don't think it means he wasn't a good coach, but certainly there have been, you know, quirks and oddities and things like that, that, they seem to have gotten handle on. And I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say why it's taken this long for them to get to this level. But you rightly point out, they stop Ohio State, which a call that will be disputed forever. If they get the benefit of the doubt on that call, JT Barrett, fourth down play in overtime, they win that game and they go on and they probably go to the playoff that year. So it's, you know, it's been close, but now they've got the opportunity right in front of them. Just don't step into the empty elevator shaft.
I know your love for this sport, and I love you drinking coffee too. This is awesome. It's like we're sitting around a morning show on local access television. I like this. I like this.
Yeah, but can we ask you, where did your books go behind you?
Yeah.
We've relocated. I'll put it that
okay.
way.
Fair enough.
We've relocated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk relocation because I know you love the sport. Lincoln Riley at USC. There's I'm an SEC guy, but there's something exciting about USC getting that kind of coach out there. There seems to be more interest instantly in the Pac-12.
Well, that's what they needed. They needed a splash hire. They needed a guy who could draw talent. And, you know, you've already seen that with the 23 quarterback, Malachi Nelson, who was going to Oklahoma. Now he's going to SC. And I think there are a couple other players who are following suit with that. So Lincoln was a tremendous hire for Mike Bone. But there's always a but, you know, I'm not trying to take everybody to negative town. I think he's going to be wildly successful there. That's what I think. But I also believe it's fair to point out that he was handed the keys in Norman to a Lamborghini that Bob Stoops had built. And, you know, Lincoln drove the heck out of that Lambo. He drove the heck out of it, but he didn't build it. And now he's got to go and build it. There are chassis adjustments that need to be made. The fuel injectors need to be unclogged. The turbo lag needs to be addressed. And, you know, everything down to the tires. They've got a lot to do at SC. He hasn't done that before. Doesn't mean he can't. I suspect that he will, because certainly he may have access in terms of skill position players anyway to the greatest auto parts, if we want to continue the metaphor, the greatest auto parts area in the world, you know, with all of the quarterbacks and receivers and running backs he'll have access to, you know, within a stone's throw of campus. So I think it's a great hire, and I think he'll do a great job. But he is being asked to do something that we haven't seen him do yet, and that's build the car, build the machine, pretty much from the ground up.
Alabama fan says, it's not the lack of books, Lance. Reese is doing it from the Georgia Trophy Room.
Oh, no, no.
That from Goal Line Stan on Twitter.
No,
that's
pretty good.
That's a great line.
That's pretty good. I'll give him that. Pollock, you know, Pollock and I do a podcast every week, and I've been telling him, you know, this is the year. He goes, we're Georgia people. We've seen this movie. We know how this goes. So, you know, there is a sense among their fans, while they are confident on the one hand, there's some trepidation just because of the number of times that they've been on this stage and had their hearts broken, whether in the SEC championship game, whether the blackout game, you know, whether the Labor Day night game, you know, in 1985, whatever it is, they've, you know, Alabama, as they have to many, has been a thorn in their side. They've vexed them for years. Yep. And I've often thought that when Georgia beats them, and they will, whether it's, you know, Saturday or another time, or, you know, or not Saturday, and then again in the playoff or something like that, I don't feel like it'll be like on a batted down pass as time expires, or on a second and 26 touchdown. I sort of feel like it'll be, you know, 38-17, you know, like that they'll kind of, it'll be sort of one of those cathartic victories that they get, sort of much like, I guess, Michigan got against Ohio State last week.
All right, C. Reese, bright and early Saturday on ESPN Game Day from just outside the Dome there in Atlanta. Thank you so much for the time.
Actually, I think we're going to be in Fan Fest, so it'll be inside, much more comfortable.
My apologies from inside Fan Fest. I was actually told that earlier this week and completely forgot.
I thought I mentioned that to you.
It's not your job to keep up with that.
I
got to know where to go. You guys know a quick story. They almost lost us going inside the big house on Saturday. We had a rookie driver, a kid who got scared and didn't realize he was in an escort and was driving like he was, you know, proceeding across campus and yielding to pedestrians and other people and being polite. And I'm like, dude, show's not waiting on us. You've got to find your way in here. Because where we were, we couldn't walk. It was, you know, it was like a long haul from the outside set inside. So anyway.
So go see him inside of Fanfare right next to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Thank you so much for the time, Reese.
All right, guys. See you later.
All right, take care. Reese Davis with us on the Pepsi Hotline.